This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, welcome in to Think Truth Podcast. Alongside Mike Evans, I am Mark Schler, Scott the Hub producing the show. Millennial Ben helping out as well. Like to thank our presenting sponsors, the great folks over at Superbook for America's best bet. You can trust Superbook. Mike, how are you, my friend?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. Just kind of watching this whole Aaron Rodgers thing, which I guess finally we got some fresh news on it, right? When he went on SportsCenter, Kenny Mayne's farewell, and the two of them are friends, and Kenny Mayne asked him about, you know, where his head's at. And if for those who missed it, here's what Rodgers had to say about his current situation with the Packers.
That was a good question. You know, I think sometimes people forget what really makes an organization. And, you know, history is important. You know, legacy of so many people who've come before you. But the people, that's the most important thing. The people make an organization. People make a business. And sometimes that gets forgotten. You know, culture is built brick by brick, the foundation of it by the people. You know, not by the organization, not by the building, not by the corporation. It's built by the people. And I've been fortunate enough to play with a number of amazing, amazing people and got to work for some amazing people as well. And it's those people that build the foundation of those entities. And I think sometimes we forget that, you know.
Are you demanding a trade?
With my situation, look, it's never been about, you know, never been about the draft pick, picking Jordan. I love Jordan. He's a great kid. You know, he a lot of fun to work together. I love the coaching staff, love my teammates, you know, love the fan base in Green Bay. It's incredible 16 years. It's just kind of about a philosophy, you know, and maybe forgetting that it is about the people that make the thing go. It's about character. It's about culture. It's about doing things the right way. And a lot of this was put in motion last year, and the wrench was just kind of thrown into it when I won MVP and played the way I played last year. So this is just kind of, I think, the spill out of all that, but look, man, it is about the people, and that's the most important thing. Green Bay has always been about the people, from Curly Lambeau being owner and founder to the 60s with Lombardi and Bart Starr and all those incredible names, to the 90s teams with Coach Holmgren and Farvey and the Minister of Defense, to the run that we've been on. It's about the people.
So what's your take on all of this?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that resonate with me, and Aaron Rodgers is 100% right. I think oftentimes teams tend to start looking at themselves as the reason they have success. Like the team, the organization, the coaches. Like, schemes are great, Mike. Putting a great scheme together is awesome, and you have to have that. But ultimately, it's the players. It's the players, and it is the relationships. It is how you build those relationships. It is how you grow together, how you sacrifice for one another. That's what makes a great organization. And, you know, that really resonates with me when Aaron talks about character and culture being built brick by brick. And all that stuff, I just think, is so vitally important to building any organization. And it is about the people. It is about the way that you're treated. It is about the way that you're collaborative. It is about all those things. And I think oftentimes in the NFL or in professional sports in general, that people get enamored with what they do. You know, they get enamored with the way they scheme, the way they do things. And ultimately, you got to have players that can execute. Schemes are great. You know what's better than schemes? Players. Players are what wins you football games and gives you a chance
to
win championships.
So who's he pissed at?
Well, I think he's pissed. I personally think he's pissed, obviously, at the GM. And I think he's pissed at the organizational structure. And, you know, interestingly enough, some things resonate with you as a player. And I don't know exactly what went on in the back end, behind the scenes. But if you're told one thing by the organization and they do the exact opposite of that one thing, or if they ask you for your opinion and you give them your opinion and they go 100%, like 180 the other direction, it can wear on you. Now, I was never in a position like Aaron Rodgers to be able to give you my weighted opinion on something because, I didn't have that pull. I wasn't that caliber player. I wasn't the quarterback. But if you've said, hey, Aaron, we want your input, and then you never listen to the input, well, then you're just full of shit, right? And that, I think there's a lot of those little things. You know, he mentions... I love, Jordan Love. He's a great kid. We've got a great relationship. It's not about Jordan Love. But if you were asked for your input, and your input was, man, let's go get ourselves another weapon opposite Devontae Adams, right? It's the number one wide receiver class in football. Let's get somebody opposite him. Let's go, And then all of a sudden, you take Jordan Love as opposed to taking... Where did Jeffries go? The kid from Minnesota, right? Where did Jeffries go?
Jefferson.
What did I say?
Jeffries.
Jefferson. Where did Jefferson go? Like, where was that? Well, what was that? Where did he get drafted? Hold on for a second. Play some efforting music for me, will you? 2020 draft, NFL draft.
Wherever I go.
Yes, and we do this on our show all the time.
Yes, it's a hit, trust me, folks.
Right, yeah, it's
okay?
Good. It's really,
maybe you need to listen to it a few more times to truly appreciate the greatness. But,
right, exactly. So just understand that that's...
We're getting real work done here.
Yes,
right. Only lead to the improvement of this podcast.
So Burrow was taken number one overall, Chase Young 2, Okuda 3. All right, let's see. So you got CeeDee Lamb taking 17. I thought he was really good as a wide receiver. Jalen Reagor was taken number 21. Justin Jefferson taken 22. Jordan Love taken 26. And so, to me, Ayuk taking 25 right above Jordan Jefferson. So, like, if you've
and
sat
even some
down,
of the guys that went after Jordan Love that were still on the board that you could have taken, guys like T. Higgins, Michael Pittman, good receivers in a very deep class.
So, if you've been told, hey, what's your opinion? What are you thinking? And you're like, hey, man, I really like somebody opposite, whatever, or a dominant hybrid tight end that that everybody who's really good seems to have that guy. And, 9 years in a row, you've drafted defense. That's not on
Gutekunst
or whatever his name is. Yeah. I mean, but you know what I'm saying. And so at some point you just go, this is total bullshit. Like one of the things that happened to me, and I don't know that I'm bitter about it because, I'm still really good friends with the people who did it, but late in my career in Washington, my last couple of years, I played all of 92 needing knee surgery and elbow surgery. Every day you're called a warrior every day, blah, 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 blah. 93, I got really sick and missed the last half of the season with Guillain-Barré. Barré?
I think it's Barré.
Yeah, Barré syndrome. I never could say it, but I mean, I was really sick, Mike. I lost shoot, I went from 295 down to 235. I lost all the feeling in my arms and legs for 4 months, you know. I came back to training camp. I was only 268. I had a toe and part of my foot was still numb. Like, I wasn't in very good shape. And so I go to training camp and I'm playing. And they brought somebody in. It was Norv Turner's first year. And Norv brought somebody in, John Giesick, to essentially replace me. Well, John hurts his neck. And so, anyhow, I end up starting. And right before the first game on Friday, they called me up to the GM's office and said, hey, here's a new contract. You either take this pay cut or right after the game, we're going to release you. So
that
happened, right? And, you know, it's the way the NFL operates, so it is what it is. But the thing that really irritated me was, you know, for years I've been called a warrior. For years it was, like, so important and tone-setting in the way you play, even though you're hurt and this, that, and the other. And then in 94, you know, I'm rotating with John Giesick when he comes back. He's healthy, then he gets hurt again, and I start, you know, I'm starting every game. In the last 4 or 5 games of the season, started to play really well. Got my strength back, got my weight back. And we have the season ending. You know, you have your season ending kind of checkout with your coaches. And my coach, who's a dear friend, just passed away, the great Jim Hanifin. We're sitting in his office. And, you know, I don't get mad about much. I'm a teddy bear. And so it takes a lot to get me kind of over the edge. And he said, hey, listen, you know, we rotated you this year because we were really concerned about your health. And, you know, that's why we ended up doing that. And I was like, fuck you. Don't give me that bullshit. You know, that has not... You
snapped right away.
Yeah, right away. I was so mad because it was so false. It was so untrue. And he wasn't expecting it from me because, you know... I normally wouldn't say, you know, crap with a mouthful, right? But I was just so upset by that comment. And to Jimmy's credit, and Jimmy and I are dear friends. He just passed away a little bit ago, but a couple months ago. And we're dear friends. We remain dear friends. And I understand he was kind of, you got to toe the company line, right? But don't give me a, and so he apologized. He goes, you're right. You know, I'm sorry, I should have never done that. And ultimately, though, what it ended up doing is it ended up making me go, I just don't want to play here anymore. I need to be out. I can't have you guys feed me this line of crap, right? And I just, it's time. It's time for me to leave. It's time for you guys to do your own thing. And which was the best decision I had ever made, you know, in my football career. But at the same time, at that point, you know, it was you're going into the great unknown. And I had no idea. Like, it's easier to stick where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
At least you have familiarity with it, right? But anyhow, it ended up working out. But after that, I was done. I was like, because I had thought about, hey, man, I'm starting to play well again. I'll get an opportunity. I think I'm a better player than anybody they could try to replace me with, blah, blah, blah. And what it came down to is it was just time to go. And I feel kind of like that's where Aaron Rodgers is.
Well, then let me connect the dots then. So then to me, the most important figure now becomes Mark Murphy, the CEO of the Packers. Because here's a guy who's been around for the last, you know, 13, 14, 15 years. He's seen Favre. He's seen Rodgers. I mean, he knows
mm-hmm.
better than anybody, you know, the importance of guys like this. So either... he is complicit in knowing that, you know, Brian Gutekunst said, hey, we want your opinion, your feedback, and then you don't give it to him, then Murphy is complicit with this as well. Or, you know, Murphy has to look at it and say, hey, wait a minute, Brian, you said you were going to do this for Rodgers. You didn't. Now he's pissed. I got to choose between the two of you. You're gone.
Right. Yeah, I think Aaron has referred to it several different times, like kind of to the degree of I've thrown a monkey wrench into your guys' plans because you plan on, you know, playing me 1 year and pushing me out to, you know, sending me off into the wild blue yonder.
Okay, that's a talent. That's a talent evaluation that the front office had. That's different than, hey, we believe you can be the guy for several more years, so much so that we want your input,
mm-hmm.
and now we're not giving it to you. You know what I mean? Those are different issues.
Right. Right. No, I know exactly what you mean, but I think what ended up happening is they're looking at it like, hey, man, we can move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can rebuild. We can, you know, we can rely on a young quarterback. He's going to have some growing pains. We know that. But, again, we've got this great system. But here's the deal. What we don't want to do is we don't want to hamstring our franchise for another 5 years if we think that Aaron Rodgers is only going to be really legit for two more years.
Okay.
And I know quarterbacks are playing in their 40s. I get all that. You know, I get what Tom Brady has done. I get what Drew Brees has done. I get all that. But, you know, Aaron is hosting Jeopardy. Aaron's mm-hmm. he's got, you know, other things going on as well. So I can see where the Packers are like, hey, we've got this grand plan. And then Aaron plays at an MVP level where he's, you know, throwing 40-plus touchdowns and 5 interceptions. And you're just like, Lord have mercy, now what? And obviously he's pissed. He's pissed at like, as a player, Mike, you see it all the time. You've watched the Hard Knocks, right? Yep. You watch guys get cut and turn in your playbook, and they're just so thankful. Like, hey, man, thanks for the opportunity. Then they load up a trash bag full of crap, and they walk out. Like, the bottom line for most players is, I can handle the truth. Just give me the truth. But don't lie. Just don't lie about it, right? This game is really hard. Don't lie to me.
But I know maybe I'm just having a hard time figuring this out, and maybe everyone else can see it. But okay, let's say the monkey wrench thing. They had already kind of made up their mind that, you know, he's only got a couple years left, and then all of a sudden, boom, he gives an MVP performance. Why can't you just turn around and go to Rodgers? Hey, look, we didn't think you had this in you. You did. You proved us wrong. We think you got 4 or 5 more years of football at a high level. Let's get this done. You know, otherwise, if they feel like what this past year was just a fluke,
right,
and that they're still their evaluation of this guy is still in play, that he's only got a couple years left, then they shouldn't have any issue with trading him. If anything, they should be eager to trade him because, hey, we know this guy better than anybody, and we think he's only got a couple of more good years in him, mm-hmm. even though he just won an MVP. What a perfect time. If anything, they should be pumped that he won the MVP because now you can look at it and say his value may never be higher. Right. We can get a haul for this guy, for a guy that we think is done in a couple years.
Yeah, the year before, last year, last year's MVP, 13-3 the team went. He completed 70.7% of his passes, 4,299 yards, 48 TDs, Mike. 48
crazy.
TDs.
Crazy.
And I don't know what his interceptions were. The year before, though, they were 13-3. He completed 62% for 4,000 yards and had 26 TDs. So, you know, maybe they're looking at it like, hey, but you can't look at Aaron Rodgers and say last year was an anomaly. The year before was his first year in a new offense,
right,
where it was a new scheme. And Aaron told me, he's like, the difference between Mike McCarthy and Matt LaFleur is we're more scheme-oriented. You know, we rely on the scheme to get guys open. We set people up. Whereas Mike McCarthy wanted to get one-on-one situations and just throw it to the best matchup. Like, hey, if I can get my guy on your guy, we have a great matchup there, right? So it's a little bit different in the way they approach it. But the way he played last year was just outrageous.
Outrageous. Sublime.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fascinating story. It remains the biggest story in all the NFL as we wait to see what's going to happen. I guess maybe a close second now is what's going to happen with Julio Jones, who went on with your pal Shannon Sharp on FS1 and said, I'm out of here.
Right.
How'd that thing sour?
Right, right. Now, first off, Atlanta is talking about a first-round draft choice for Julio Jones. You think they'll get a first-rounder for Julio?
Receiver north of 30 coming off an injury-plagued season? I doubt it.
Right. And it's not even that, it's not even the first rounders are coveted because they hit, or because they're great, because they're whatever. The first rounders are more coveted because of the salary, the cost certainty, than they are, hey man, this guy, we're gonna, you know, this guy's gonna change our franchise. So there is a little bit of the intrigue of being a first rounder and what you might get. But the bigger deal there is, well, we've got an opportunity to set somebody's salary for the next 5 years. And, you know, and if the guy becomes a superstar, we'll tear it up after 3 years and redo it. But if he's just a good player, man, we'll milk it out.
Plus, you know? Get to sell the illusion of potential. That gives fans wood. You know, yeah. Plus, for GMs and stuff, it buys you time.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think that's where Julio Jones, because I will tell you right now, Julio Jones, like, is he more valuable than any first? Yeah, he probably is more valuable trading a known commodity for an unknown commodity. The guy is phenomenal. But, as you said, north of 30, injury riddled. I think he missed 7 games last year or so. Maybe 9 games. That's part of the deal. But Julio Jones can flat out, and that guy can flat out play. And here's the other thing, Mike. I've done enough Atlanta games where I'm on the field on Thursday or Fridays. Man, he's not a diva. He just goes to work. Man, he is just working and setting a tone where everybody's got to jump up their game. So really, really interesting to see kind of what goes down there with Julio Jones.
Well, and you had Terry Fontenot, the new GM, coming over and saying, hey, look, you know, at some point we got to deal with our salary cap issue. You know, we got these kind of contracts that we just can't keep, you know, restructuring. And that's kind of code for, like, look, the for sale sign is up.
I mean, right.
We can win 6 games. We can lose 10, 11 games with Julio Jones. We can lose 10, 11 games without him. Plus, we got Matt Ryan that we're still believing in. And if he's, you know, the kind of quarterback that he is, he can make receivers, you know, like a Russell Gage or Calvin Ridley, you know, they're the next one. So if he is indeed traded, and it sure seems like he will, all right, let's play the same game that we're playing with Aaron Rodgers. Where does he go?
Yeah. So he's already said, well, Atlanta's basically said they don't want to trade him in the NFC. He'd be great with the Giants. But he said he wants to go win a championship. Like, he wants to go win. He said he didn't want to go to Dallas on Shannon Sharpe's show. So, like, that leaves AFC teams, right? To me, there's two teams that make, probably two teams that make the most sense. Maybe there's three teams that make a ton of sense in the AFC. All right? And I'm not going to get worried about salary cap or any of that stuff right now for for this conversation. Why? Because if you want him, you'll find a way to get him. You'll find a way to fit him. So my number one team that I think he's got a chance, Buffalo, the Bills.
Ooh, wow. Yeah. Him and Stephon Diggs?
Yeah, ready-made. Woo! On the other side of Stephon Diggs. They have got, you know, they're a spread, shotgun, throw the football all over the place football team. Kansas City Chiefs. The rich on offense get richer.
Mm-hmm.
You know that Andy Reid doesn't trade. Look at the Super Bowl. He doesn't want, averages 7.5 yards a carry and doesn't want to run the ball. Like that makes sense to me. Indianapolis. Indianapolis is interesting.
Another good one, yeah.
Like, can you get Carson Wentz to play, you know, good football again? They've got a great running game, really good offensive line. Obviously, Julio Jones, after what happened to you last year, where, I mean, you look at Carson Wentz last year with the Eagles, and I tell you what, his receiving corps retired and didn't tell anybody.
Right,
they were awful.
Right.
Just awful. Alshon Jeffries was horrible, the rookie. Rager was horrible, Jalen Rager. I shouldn't say horrible. He just wasn't
impactful, right?
Yeah, impactful. It just is.
What about Raiders? What about New England? Belichick loves those Alabama guys, and now, he looks at it as like, I mean, come on, Belichick's making it quite clear. He's embarrassed by what Brady did last year. He's trying to get back quickly. Saw what he did in free agency. Yeah. Why stop there?
New England does make some sense. I will tell you, though, if you're Julio, let's face it. I think receivers look at this thing like fans look at it. Who's the quarterback?
Absolutely. I wouldn't want to go to New England if I was Julio.
Oh.
You just named three or four teams I'd much rather go to.
Right, because if you're Julio, you're like, yeah, I'd go there. They went with the double tight end package. And, you know, how long is Cam going to be good for? Is it going to be 4 games this year, 8 games this year? Is it going to be 12 games? Like, at what point does he start falling apart? What if they make a move to Mac Jones?
Right.
Then where am I at?
Right.
So
I got a couple years left in this league at a high level. I got to break in a rookie quarterback. No thanks. Now, I think you hit the teams. Buffalo, Indy. How about Cleveland?
Cleveland is interesting. I just don't know. Like, does Odell Beckham Jr. come back this year to Cleveland? Like, where is his health at?
I guess if I'm Cleveland, do I want to tie myself to that, or would I rather try to move on?
Well,
because is Julio Jones, for all the reasons you just said, is he much more reliable than OBJ?
Well, there's no question he's much more reliable. And they have got an outstanding football team. So that could be a possibility.
But there's some good possibilities in the AFC, for sure. Yeah. No, absolutely. So, hey, it's a fascinating offseason. Aaron Rodgers, Julio Jones. We wait. June 1st, here it comes.
June 1st, it'll be interesting. If they can't work trades, are they just going to cut guys?
Oof.
There's another.
You know what? You're right. The veteran free agent post-June 1 market should be fun to watch, too.
Right.
Could be some good big names out there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, for everybody involved in the Stink Truth Podcast, I am Mark. He is Mike. Like to thank our presenting sponsor, great folks over there at Superbook for all your for America's Best Bet. Try out Superbook at superbook.com. Mike, thank you, buddy.